grace.
If I do a quick Google search, which I am prone to do, and I'm guessing some of you are as well on a number of things, it says grace means smooth and attractive movement. Obviously not me on a dance floor. Or a polite and kind way of acting. Or an unearned favor and blessing from God. And it can also mean a short prayer and thanks said before eating a meal. Got a couple other definitions from other folks on grace that I'd like to share. One is from Reverend Mark Sandlin. I don't know if you're familiar with Mark at all. He is the president and the co-executive director of the progressivechristianity.org. When I first connected with that organization, it was called the Center for Progressive Christianity. It shifted its name a number of years. He's also the co-founder of a group called the Christian Left as a response and faithful witness to the Christian Right movement. Mark shares this. Mark sees grace is a gift. It is a gift that opens you up towards love and fulfillment. There is no deserving or not deserving. It just happens. It just is. Now, I've already mentioned that for the time that I am covering for Pastor Keith, I'm going to be hitting on this topic of grace, and I mentioned that I'm going to be lifting a lot of it from this particular book, which is very well worn. I think the only other book of mine that is as worn is my Bible. And so I wanted to grab one more definition of grace from the authors. And they say, now by grace, we don't mean a wishy-washy, whatever-goes approach in which one belief is as good as another. We don't believe an attitude that ignores differences and tolerates every idea. For critics are right to label such thinking as lazy and indulgent, but what we mean by grace is a commitment to the most difficult and demanding of human acts. Engaging and loving those who think and behave in ways that we find unacceptable. Therefore, they define grace as the unfailing commitment to love all persons, regardless of their beliefs. And I'm going to be honest, over the last several years, I have found that harder and harder and harder to do. I have watched the world continue to shift and change. I have continued to watch hatred and division rise up. I've continued to watch the most vulnerable among us suffer more and more. And I am, to be completely honest, there are days that I don't feel like I have the grace that I should for those that I don't agree with. So I'm learning right along with the rest of you what it is we should be doing, could be doing in that area. But I then find myself going back to some of my foundational time in ministry. Raised within the Christian Church Disciples of Christ, which is basically, I used to call it kissing cousins to the UCC, and I've decided I really don't like that vernacular. But we are a parallel tradition with one another. We are a covenantal tradition, disciples and UCC, to the point where I have spent as many times and much time, if not more, serving UCC churches than I have disciples. I've even served on our Heartland Conference staff for a short bit of time, even though it was known as the Ohio Conference back then. I have served as our disaster response coordinator for our conference here in Ohio. I have directed our outdoor ministries program when it was in a time of transition. But back in my earliest foundational times, I went to seminary at an incredibly conservative evangelical seminary. It was close to home. It was proximity that I could drive, and within my first couple of weeks, my eyes got big and my heart got heavy. And within the third week, I had scheduled a time to meet with the academic dean to say, I made a mistake. I think I need to withdraw, and I'm going to go explore seminaries a little bit further away. To his credit, he asked me to ride the rest of the semester out, simply saying, we hope you don't leave, we hope you will consider staying. We're not here to necessarily get you to believe differently, but perhaps by being here, you might believe even stronger in what you believe. Subsequently, for the next 3 years, there were very live conversations both in the classroom and in the local coffee house between myself as basically the only progressive person on campus and what would become good friends of mine. We would have lively conversations over our understanding of faith, our understanding of God, our understanding of so many things. It's where, quite honestly, I connected in with what became the Center for Progressive Christianity. I learned and met authors such as Jack Spong and Marcus Borg at that seminary. Now, they were the footnotes that everybody that they were lifting up was refuting, but something resonated with me as I read them and then brought that to class. I lift that up because that dean was full of grace for me and with me. And by extension, I learned to be gracious with my fellow classmates, even as we disagreed on a whole range of things. I mentioned that was very spirited conversation in classroom and coffee house. By the time I graduated, I think we came to an understanding that they believed that this liberal disciple actually did believe in God, and I acknowledged that those much more conservative folk really did love people. We just showed it in very different ways. At the very beginning of the book, If God Is Love, Rediscovering Grace, The authors write in an interesting way. Two very distinct people, and yet they use the word I in all the stories that they share, so you're not trying to figure out if it's Philip or if it's... They just write saying I, and they've collectively brought their stories together. They start their book with a story that resonates closely with me. They said they started with a small country church out of the best of intentions. And this small church lovingly welcomed him in. And they decided they could overlook some of the differences. He came to realize they liked their music like a fine bottle of wine, very aged. So he decided not to introduce projection screen and drums and even clapping. They discovered that he was a very silent speaking person. And then rather than saying, you need to speak louder, they invested in a better microphone system. And that was going well until, after a certain sermon, A well-seasoned member of the congregation said, "From what I am picking up, do you believe in hell and do you believe in Satan?" Well, being a young, inexperienced pastor, he simply said, "I do not. But if that's what you believe, then we can all get along fine and find our common things." The very following Sunday, which was Palm Sunday, he was let go by the congregation. How dare he have those kind of thoughts and beliefs? Now they go on to share their next call. He was just as open about his beliefs. And someone asked him again, "I get a sense that you don't believe this and this." He gave the same answer. And this well-seasoned person said, "Good, I need somebody who speaks their mind." And that relationship flourished. Here's a reason I share that. Resonates well with me in the number of churches that I have served. I normally, in my time doing transitional ministry for the last couple of decades, have gone into places that have either blown up or have had significant trauma. And normally it's because there is a clash of ideas and beliefs. It's not normally the color of the carpet or what color to paint the wall or even a projection screen or anything else. It's normally folks not talking and listening well with one another, not being gracious enough with one another. I was called. Here's the problem with having somebody come in and serve for you that has had as many church experiences that I have had. Mostly wonderful, some a little rocky, all very interesting. I could probably go for 2, 3, 4 hours every Sunday regaling you with stories and experiences, and I'm guessing not one of you want to endure that, especially next week when we have a potluck. But I will share that one particular setting, I took my first conversation with the church when I was in Search and Call while I was still serving in Afghanistan. We were getting ready to deploy back home. I was going to need a church to serve. I'm starting to see a pattern. They were conveniently located by where I was returning to. I had that mistake of saying, I'm a fairly progressive minister, and they came back and said, "Great, we are a progressive congregation," and I let it lie. I got home, the people were nice, I signed the covenant. What I meant by being progressive was very similar to what I shared by Mulholland and Gully. And what they meant was they had recently put a projection screen in. And once in a while, they were open to drums and guitars. And we served together for about 2 years, loving each other despite our significant differences and challenges. It ended fairly well. Not too long ago, I served my last settled pastorate, and there have been about 6 transitional churches since then. I got called to serve a congregation, and somebody had done their research. And they found that I was connected with this thing called the Center for Progressive Christianity. And there's these 8 points to include the affirmation of folks that are LGBTQIA+. And this well-seasoned couple wrote a letter to every member of the congregation saying, "How dare you call this person?" And then decided to send a letter to the entire community saying, "This is the kind of person that we've called." I was expecting that my time there was going to be about as short as what was lifted up in the first chapter of this book. As a matter of fact, their musician decided to submit their resignation the second week I was there. Because how dare a minister of the gospel believe that all people are created in the divine image of God, that should be not only welcomed, but loved and affirmed. And the church panicked, because it was hard finding musicians then as it is now. And we went 3 months without a musician. We went 3 months with my leading the congregational singing. That should have been enough for them to show me the door. But the leadership of that church stood pat. And while they didn't agree with everything that I was saying and sharing, they were open to hearing. And a number of them had family, and a number of them had friends that had been hurt and excluded from the church. Well, in that period of time, when they were stuck with me leading music, I asked a certain individual who filled in for them on occasion if he knew anybody that might be interested within his music setting that would be interested in coming to serve. This person was well beloved within the greater community. He worked within the high school setting. He was one of the most renowned musicians in the area. And he simply looked at me and said, "I do. I'd like to put my hat in the ring. I would like to leave where I'm serving because I believe strongly in what it is you are saying and where this church is going." Matter of fact, he said, "I'm looking for a congregation that is full of grace." This is where I really wish I had saved all my notes, because I have so many more wonderful things to share with you that I will starting next week. And I'm going to start it early enough and save it in a different number of different formats to include even going old school and printing the thing out, which I have not done, and I can't tell you how long. I am looking forward, folks, to spending the next 8 weeks or so serving alongside you, talking about being not only a congregation called Grace, but continuing to be a congregation that is living out grace. I have known about this congregation for years. I served as a transitional pastor for David's UCC just up the road in Canal. I have known your pastor for a number of years. I have loved hearing from him all of the different ways that you live out a gracious understanding of the gospel of good news. I love the fact that when I asked if I could go unfurl the flag when I pulled in this morning that had gotten wrapped up because of the wind, that somebody said, "Yes, please." So I'm not sure I'm going to be saying a whole lot of things that perhaps you aren't already doing. I think more importantly, what I'm going to be doing is entering in the conversation with you to say, how do we graciously deal with folks that we encounter who believe differently, who worship differently, who aren't as affirming. In a world right now that is so doggone divided, left, right, red, blue, I can continue to go down the long laundry list of everything that our nation and this world seems to be doing to divide us and fracture us from one another. perhaps the biggest challenge for us is not being a people of grace for ourselves, but entering into conversations to be gracious to those that we find a really hard time even being around. I haven't even looked at my watch. I could go another hour, hour and a half, two, or let's leave that there for this morning. Let's pick it up next week, where I will be a little bit better prepared tech-wise, but my spirit will still be full of the good news of the gospel of grace and of love. People of grace, may we be just that, a people of grace. Amen.